Hello, this is reflexivityspace.org. My name is Dr. Mark. I'm the owner of reflexivityspace.org. I'm not a medical doctor, I'm a doctor of business administration. I have met a very interesting person with whom I want to start a podcast series. His name is Mike, and I call him Mike from abroad. And I would leave the floor now quickly to Mike to first introduce himself prior we going into the dialogue. This is the first podcast of reflexivityspace.org, and today's date is the 21st of November 2022. Mike, the floor is yours.
Hello, Mark. Hello, everybody. I want to thank you for the introduction, Mark, and for the opportunity to share with you and others ideas about an emerging world around us. I want to give a brief background to who I am and what's sort of the basis of my beliefs and what I plan to share with people. I'll break it down into family life briefly, work life, and a little bit related to the progression to where I am now. Basic background, just to lend to my perspective, is my father's a doctor, mother's a nurse, both sisters are nurses. I'm the one that did not go with the healthcare field. Frankly, as a child, I saw issues with it. I had doubts. My father was an engineer and an MD. I spent a lot of time with him. I learned a lot. It was the basis for building a logic and deductive-based sort of reasoning. Through life, I worked my entire career in the electronics field, the technical field, technical marketing. I taught technology, electronics in the workplace. I taught workflow from a television network and or newspaper sort of standpoint. So my perspectives will be somewhat based on that. And I will try to use some analogies to help build on an understanding based on some of the things that I've come in contact with. The things we want to talk about primarily in the beginning would be EMF, or an invisible field that's affecting all of us. And I can share with you some things that led to the development of where we sit now.
Okay. Mike, you know, as we were talking prior to this conversation, we were elaborating around the sky, and you sent me some amazing photographs that you have taken in the past and that you are still taking. And me, as the total layman, I'm trying to understand and learning a lot in the process, and I think this is important information to be shared with our audience. Now, the topic is, what do we see in the sky? What's going on in the sky? And I would like you to talk to me and the audience how you interpret what is maybe going on, and where do we come from, where are we going with this probably technology that is used in weather modification, etc. Can you talk to us about that, please?
Absolutely. Can you hear me, Mark?
I can hear you. Just go.
Okay. Essentially, I mentioned I worked in the corporate field for 30 years and most of my life. I traveled extensively for a living. And I had to anticipate what the weather would be across the United States. And it drew me to looking a lot more at weather maps and studying the weather to determine how I dress over a week's time and whether I need to take two or three wardrobes with me. So I started watching the weather maps, and I saw things that just didn't make sense to me. I saw patterns in the weather that didn't make sense, and I saw patterns in the sky that started to tell a story. It appeared that the jet stream was really no longer the influence that we've been led to believe it may be, that there were other factors at play. I could see a direct relationship with the skies and the weather, and that led me to think more, why would I look at the skies? I'm a lifetime photographer, and when you're shooting wildlife or natural photos, the sky is a vital part of it. Blue skies are awesome. They're rare these days. But more so, every single skyscape I took pictures of had chemtrails, lines, patterns in the sky. So that even further developed my sense of concern. Questions, Mark?
Yeah, but where do you think we are now? What do you see? What is happening in your place? We're obviously not in the same location. Where I am, I'm talking to you out of Switzerland, and we are living up high up in the mountains, surrounded by many peaks exceeding 4,000 meters in altitude. We don't have so many planes flying over that region where we are. So, as you can imagine, it's winter time, it's extremely cold, it's crisp, and we have fantastic blue skies where I am. Now, there seem to be differences in terms of how certain regions are affected. Can you talk about this to us a little bit?
I think to address what you brought up, I live in the middle of the country. I live in the area called the Ozarks. So in terms of large cities nearby, there's Kansas City, St. Louis, Oklahoma City, Little Rock, and they're all 200 miles away. Yet in the middle of the country, in the middle of country land, I see skies all the time. Or I'm not in the flight path of St. Louis. I'm not in the flight path of Dallas or Little Rock. The other thing to me, to address a greater portion of this and really drawing on my sense of concern, was, as I mentioned, I travel for a living. There's a couple programs, FlightAware, Flight Tracker, that you can look and see what are airlines in the skies. The reason I did that was if I was getting a connecting flight, I could track whether it was in on time, and I could make my way to the airport rather than wasting time on an airplane that had been held up in Philadelphia for 2 hours. The planes within this flight tracking database never appear as the ones that are overhead doing the magic. So in essence, there is a separate flight system that's not rendered publicly that shows these flights overhead. So oftentimes I would take pictures, come inside, do screen captures on my computer on maps. Again, there was a disparity. Essentially, there's two things I think that are at play. Is they talk about driving the aerial rivers or the water systems above our head, that they're basically rivers that carry massive amounts of moisture. I live in one of the most moisture-laden places in the country, and it's evident that moisture is being steered from here or from falling here and projected out eastward towards the Tennessee and the Carolinas. So you can see the pattern. So one, I think the prevalence of such weather work has to do with location, has to do with moisture and atmospheric conditions. But the third component is I live nearby within, miles of I-44, which is a major highway, and there are quote-unquote cell phone towers or EMF towers. Every 5 to 10 miles, you can see them on the highway, and you let.
That is interesting because, as you are talking about the moisture may be having an effect on this. It is absolutely. I live in the driest, probably driest area in Switzerland. That may explain that we don't see it so much. Now that you
I agree.
mentioned that.
I agree wholeheartedly.
But we are fully 5G as well up here. I mean, it shows me 4G plus, but that's obviously 5G already. But go ahead, because with these towers and maybe how it all comes together with the sky. Can you
An
develop on
example,
this?
sorry. An example I like is I've seen on YouTube, and people may have seen it, where you could take a speaker driver and feed a signal to, let's say, 4,000 hertz. You pour sand or salt over the speaker, and as you change the frequency, the pattern of the salt crystals change. So as an abstract, there's a very direct way we can pattern frequencies and their influence over materials, solids in this case. If we take that to the sky or overhead, we're seeing a similar pattern. And as Mark had said, I've got pictures I can provide, or I've provided him as well as others, and I archive a lot of this, that you can see where there's a streak through the sky coming off of a jet. Over a period of time, it's broken into patterns, into bands, and then it's dispersed or aerosolized. So that frequency pattern that we saw on a speaker with a frequency driven to it and material changing pattern based on frequency, we're seeing directly overhead. The other factor or facet is that they can affect different materials based on their resonant or natural vibratory frequency. So let's say in spraying, they spray calcium, aluminum, strontium, barium, all these materials, they all different have a different frequency at which they resonate or they're excited. A good way of thinking of this as an abstract is when we look through a prism and the light does not go uniformly through the glass. It's going to bend at different rates based on its wavelength. So whether it be a glass or let's talk a material, it influences the frequency around it, or it is excitable at certain frequency rates. So when we take, if that makes sense, and apply that to the sky, you've got certain materials that when are excited with certain frequencies, they will become excited and become active. Another thing that I would say, this is a tangent, but I think it's worth mentioning, is I live where there's so many cell phone towers, yet I cannot get cell phone reception. So there's plenty of towers, there's plenty of coverage. What has happened to the bandwidth? Is it people downloading movies? Is it me surfing the web? Or is it other uses that are nefarious? I'll stop.
I ask a question. Do you then think that if you look at the atmosphere and we have all these particles, that those particles themselves could act as an antenna?
Oh, absolutely. Essentially, if you think about Elon Musk, and again, Mark and I are talking sort of outside of, I'm going to say facts. We're talking in a formative sense about technology that's not readily defined. So I want to say we're asking you all to think about this, to reason it with us, to come up with added or broadened ideas. When we talk about the way that materials are influenced, if we look in the sky, there's suspended materials that are being energized by EMF, be it from the sky or from the ground from antennas.
Yeah, I see that.
I kind of lost my footing. Essentially, we can see a pattern at play, and it's actually having an impact on aerosolizing or making the big masses into smaller and smaller and smaller. I have come to believe, and this is not really commonly spoken of, that they are now using the clouds as a form of antenna, that it's a bidirectional sensing, receiving, and sending. And to try to draw more to it, I kind of got sidetracked a little bit. Elon Musk is talking about space technology and what they're going to do, and the internet for all. Well, I believe, and some others that are in this sort of circle of thought, that they're using the clouds as a part of this intermediate. The other thing is, as Mark had commented about materials, is air itself is not conductive. If you put moisture in it, it's conductive. If you put minerals or very fine particles in it, you increase the conductivity, you increase the propagation of wave lengths or frequencies going through it.
Yeah. A very interesting remark that you made is you are surrounded by these 5G dead towers, I used to call them. Yet you don't have a signal for telephony, for instance. You're not the first talking about that. So why are they there? And the second thing is, they kind of not pointing into the sky. I mean, if I want to have satellite TV, I need a certain angle. I put them toward the sky where there may be a satellite sending a signal, no, to receive it. And yet those things are kind of vertically, mostly vertically mounted. That's, I don't understand that technology. Your thoughts?
Very good lead, Mark. If we think about it, the term antenna array would be what I would use. So let's think of the traditional 5G, in that case 4G antennas, looking like a bow tie, but instead of being sideways, it's oriented vertically. But there are multiple ones side by side by side. So they put out a field that looks like an eye with protracted top and bottom, narrow in the middle. But they put multiple units side by side. Let's think of it another way. Let's think of the disco ball, where you've got, you know, one light in the room that emanates all directions, or you throw a disco ball in the room and put a light source on it. As it moves, it radiates individual points of light. Obviously, it's turning and spinning, so this something that's another dynamic. But if we think about the disco ball analogy, essentially that antenna has a series of antennas, like individual mirrors on the disco ball, and it's radiating material in all different directions. Does that make sense?
Yep. A good analogy. Yep. Go ahead.
Okay, here's another thing to look at. Let's talk about, and this I don't want to talk in depth about because I think there's a little bit more we need to build upon, but let's think about ionizing and non-ionizing radiation. So let's think of radiation everybody is aware of, a little pellet of uranium bleeding all this insane light into the room. And while you can't see it, it's affecting everything in sight. So while it's an invisible light, the other component that makes it an ionizing form of radiation, it's not just photons, invisible elements coming out of it. They're actual particles that emit as a source of invisible light. And as those particles strike everything in the room, they become part of it, or, you know, what the radioactive light or the little disco ball field of light hits, it changes it molecularly. So when we look at ionizing radiation, it's the particle emission with strength enough, in this case, to basically corrupt or damage DNA. Non-ionizing radiation, there's a fine line that would be like a cell phone, would be a radio antenna, would be a transmitter. Depending upon its frequency and depending upon its strength, it can or it may or may not be ionizing. Where it would become ionizing, let's talk 4G and 5G, where you've got a very, very small unit of information at a very high amplitude relative to what it is. And that in and of itself makes materials unstable.
So we can think of it like it is a very short wave, very short waves?
Yes, yes.
And then in principle it's easy if we take the microwave oven. Because what does it do? It cooks food. But how does it do it, if I do understand that correctly? It kind of excites the liquid in the food, and so it starts to cook. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's so going to excite the particles, in this case water, at 2.4 gigahertz frequency, typically. The thing to bear in mind is a microwave has what's called a waveguide around it. So you've got this emitter that has a shielded box around it, so it basically controls the pattern of the energy and imparts it to only what's inside the box or inside of it. I've had some friends that have challenged the prospect of microwaves being dangerous, and, you know, they don't emit fields and a lot of other untruths. Well, I have posed to people, why don't they go and try to talk on their phone next to their cell, or talk on their cell phone next to the microwave? It's impossible. There's so much stray noise that it basically interferes with the same frequency pattern of noise of the phone, so to speak.
Yeah, because it's 2.4 gigahertz or megahertz. Yeah, but and on top that, it kills all the vitamins and whatever nutrition in the food, no? That's on top of it. So you shouldn't consume microwaved cooked food anyway. Yeah, that's one thing. And then the radiation. Now, speak a bit about the radiation, because, you know, as I'm looking at the two towers or three towers that were mounted in our small village up here in the Swiss mountains, I have at the same time noticed that there was the installation of the LED night lights. And so I see they're always like 30 to 50 meters one from another. And I have picked up, when listening to alternative medias, that there is something like a mesh Bluetooth network. Could you elaborate a little bit how this could work together, the 5G, the Bluetooth mesh network with the LED, before we maybe go then into the light spectrum of LED? Would that be all right with you?
Your prompt is excellent. It's almost like you're reading from my list of ideas. Think about it this way. EMF is all around us. We've had 900 megahertz, or what would be known as 1G, for as long as I can remember. The wireless or the cordless phones we've had in our homes since the 70s. So 900 megahertz, or let's call it 1G, was voice only. 2G is voice and text. 3G is voice, text, and moving images. 4G adds command structure to the layer of data. 5 and 6G opens up a whole new world, and as most people that have been reading or studying on this, the big thing with 5 and 6G is they have so much speed that there won't be network latency, there won't be stuttering. So if they're trying to real-time monitor an unfolding news event, and they unlock people's phones, they start streaming live feeds off their cameras, there will be nearly seamless or immediate data back and forth, even with multiple streams running. Now, 6G, to me, I don't imagine it as being something that we will use. It will be the backbone that carries the higher bandwidth requirements of 5G infrastructure, if that makes sense. So 5 and 6 will clump together, but realistically, I consider 6 as something that will be hidden or out of sight. As I said before, I wanted to get some ideas, or Mark and I wanted to get some ideas, some things to think about, some things to consider. I want to give some examples of how I've learned about Wi-Fi and how I've evolved to consider its influence on me. Is it okay to go within that, Mark, briefly before we go into maybe the next?
Yep. Go ahead. Yeah, brilliant.
I've taken ridicule for this one, but I'll go with it. I lived in a big city, lived in Chicago for 20 years, and I was always in a Wi-Fi field. When I traveled for a living, I remember being in New York or LA or any of the big cities, and you'd open up your phone or tablet, and there would be 40 Wi-Fi around you all over every. So I noticed when I traveled, I could not sleep. I had a hard time relaxing. I started modulating caffeine intake, thinking maybe it was, it had no influence, but I was always jittery and jumpy and antsy. And when I'd come back home and I could limit my exposure, I didn't go out, I didn't go to public places where I'd be exposed to this, I noticed a different personality. So the more and more I would be out and in this Wi-Fi field, and I'd come home with relative isolation or complete isolation, like night and day, my personality. And here, I moved away from the big city. I live in the country. There's a mile from me and my next neighbor. I live on a 5-mile gravel road that there are 10 people living on, so I'm really isolated. Well, I had a country cat that moved in with me, and it's a long story, but she's a good little girl. Sweet, good personality, perfect, perfect pet. Well, when I started electronifying my house, and I put a router and a 5G, not 5G, I'm sorry, a Wi-Fi transmitter, 2.4, I saw a difference in my cat. That she no longer is a sweet little cat. She was manic, running around trying to attack things. It wasn't mean, but just her personality. She had that crazed look in her eye, and I'm like, what happened to the cat? And then I would turn off the Wi-Fi, like when I'd sleep, or I'd periodize, you know, its use and or need, and I saw a distinct pattern with an animal that's close to me that I could pattern with it that actually mirrored some of my own experiences when I would be immersed in Wi-Fi that I just felt uncomfortable.
That makes absolute sense, because people that are immersed into the soup of frequencies on a constant basis, it can maybe change the people. Just the frequencies alone, as you described with the cat now. You're going now into the vaccines or whatever technology, we stay with the frequencies, so it perfectly makes sense that if we have frequency changes, we have personality changes going along with it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. One other thing that I'll add to that is, when you look at frequency changes and how could frequencies affect me, my best analogy would be, I'm an audio buff, and audio engineering is my passion. It's a whole other topic. In some ways it ties to the topic at hand. I've spent the last 20 years building power supplies and basically trying to reject noise on the AC line, EMF on the AC line, RF, or radio frequency on the AC line. I've done everything I can to limit noise coming into my systems, because when you have radio frequency or noise or hash on your AC line in music, it causes an edginess, a sharpness, an uncomfortableness. Okay, let me back up. Frequencies affect us. How could that be? Well, let's think of simple harmonics. Let's say when we go out and sit on the deck and listen to the birds sing, what are we hearing? We're hearing even order harmonics, or what would be called birdsong. And what does that do? That puts us at peace. So what do we do when we hear a siren go by, or a big diesel engine, or a jet, or like the space shuttle taking off? It's raw and ragged and jarring. It's all odd order harmonics. So a simple thing between even in order harmonics in everyday life, whether it's music or an event unfolding before you, it has an impact on our beings. Lastly, the example I would use is, imagine when your power goes out at home for 4 hours. The house is quiet. There's an indescribable sense of peace in the home that, as Mark hinted to a moment ago, we're enmeshed in noise or RF, even just acoustic noise, on an extended basis. It wears in and wears down on us. We don't realize it until we walk away, or until we have the house quiet for 4 hours and go, whoa, I don't hear a fan, I don't hear the refrigerator going, it's different. So we are a lot more affected and or infected by stray sound than we could ever imagine.
Yeah, and speaking about this frequency, was that not 100 years ago or 150 years ago where they changed the tact of the music?
Yeah, it was 432 to 440.
Uh-huh.
And I don't want to talk a lot about it, because, I mean, I will, but at a point, I tried playing the music through an audiophile, a very resolving, very true system, and my gosh, I could tap my toe to either one, so as much as I would think I would be sensitive, I ascribe to it, but I cannot pattern it within my own system, if that makes sense. So there is something about 432 tuning or 440 tuning that is viable.
Uh-huh. Then maybe we are nearing half an hour now. This is our first podcast. Could you maybe, to bring it then to an end, because it's our test, elaborate a little bit again about this 5G and maybe how it is interlinked with the LED streetlights that are always in this kind of 50 meter from each
other?
Actually,
to my way of thinking, the 5G would more likely be a trigger to activate said devices, while it wouldn't necessarily be communicating within a 5G structure, if that makes sense. Now, to go back to what you said, My feeling is the mesh networks, or essentially they're forming mesh networks by having these devices close to one another, that as they eventually build the infrastructure, they can in turn activate or empower those networks to watch people, to do crowd control. This is a tangent, I'm going to throw it out there, but when they had this ridiculous 6 feet of social distancing, it was clearly tied to them trying to fine-tune this global surveillance system, that if you and I are standing shoulder to shoulder, it yeah. mucks up the system. So there's a point that in development, you can clearly see how they're trying to do some things to build the system and build it in a way safely.
Quickly. So you think that the social distancing measures, in brackets, were made to single out people, to being able to identify them for the first time?
That's a component, but I'll put very little on that. What I put most of my emphasis on would be, let's say we go in a popular box store and there's 100 people in the store. If we're all gathering together, it confuses the sensing system that will be in place as this is more commonplace. If we're social distance, our MAC addresses are individualized rather than grouped together as one. So our individual identification is such that we're more readily recognized within this electronic monitoring system based on the electrical energy fields and the electromagnetic energy fields that we're being hit with. But I think the social distancing was part of they're fine-tuning it, and they're trying to see, okay, can we do crowd control of a group of 100 people in a bar or nightclub, or somebody in a Walmart that's, I don't know, standing there, a group of people, they have to get people apart in order to...
Yeah. So only the social distancing taken together, no? That's the technical component, and then you have the component of the conditioning component on top. No, it's brilliant. I mean, it's brilliant from their perspective.
I can't wait to talk the psychological tears with you, because there is a component that people have been like their pets, you know, told to behave and sit still and not move. And I'm trying to think of anything more to close this. If we think about energy fields, a lot of people have over time denied. They've thought I was crazy when I talked about chemtrails and or the energy patterns, when I talk about 5G or even for that Wi-Fi in the home. It is stunning that people aren't even open-minded to consider it, but if they consider some of the things we've hopefully shared and or will more in the future work upon developing, it should give enough of a basis for people to really look around themselves and quantify the potential effects based on their immediate environment.
Absolutely.
For me, I live in an RF energy field. I barely get cell phone service. I get no radio service to speak of. I get no TV service. And the cell phone is poor. At a point, I feel really at peace when I go into town, which is a couple times a month. I am uncomfortable just within, I don't know, the energy field or what. So I'm an oddball that I am completely isolated from EMF. The other thing that we'll need to talk about another meeting is about the tie-in of the smart meter and how that's influencing our home environments.
That's an interesting topic as well.
Because I think, in fairness, I'm going to say this, I don't want to interrupt you, to put it into capsules, is we got to look at EMF is what we're in contact with, i.e. our phones, tablets, and our Wi-Fi in the home. Mesh networks, you know, doorbells that watch who's at the door and things that talk mm-hmm. to one another. But the things that we need to worry about the most or consider most are the things we're in direct contact with. To me, the cell phone tower you can kind of get away from, Skynet or whatever they're calling the overhead from the satellites, is a factor that is in development and we're somewhat isolated from it. In my house, it's halfway below ground, you know, concrete and brick structure, and it's half underground. I can't even get cell phone service in my basement. So I really wonder if there's any EMF that gets to my basement.
Yet you wouldn't be shielded from this. The if they were to use, say, the sky as an antenna, that would become difficult, I guess, right?
Well, I'm going to open it up even further. Yes, but more so is it appears that your household wiring will be influenced by the smart meter. So a part I'm thinking, okay, do I put a Faraday cage around my smart meter? It's like, no, that's not enough. So this is for another topic, and it's a little premature to relate it. Now, I'm actually trying to consider if there's any type of inline filtering I could use in my house to reduce hash or noise that could be transmitted through the line. So my biggest concern right now is not so much the smart meter box, but the associated components of it. I mentioned that I've been working on power supplies, and all computers and all modern equipment use what's called a switch mode power supply. I can't stand them. It's a whole nother topic, but more than anything else, you put a switch mode power supply, which is a common power supply, inside of an audio amplifier, and it emits all kinds of RF noise into things around it, much less to the music. So the idea of switch mode supplies being in everything, it's in the smart meters, it's very likely that power supply is being triggered to put out impulse and signals that in turn would be in your wiring. I'll stop with that. I went a little further than I
Yeah,
thought,
that's
though.
perfect. That's perfect. Listen, Mike, we are 36 minutes. It's a lot of information, mind-blowing. I would say we bring it to an end for the first podcast. And I would like to say to the listeners, if you listen to this, you are the opposition. Now, Mike, I wish you a very nice evening. And I'm looking forward to connect with you ASAP for the next podcast.
That's awesome, Mark. Thanks so much for your time and taking the time to include me in this.
You are very important in this. You have so much knowledge about these things that it is really interesting to talk to you. Okay, bye, Mike.
Talk to you later, my friend.
Talk to you later.